In the criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups, the police who investigate crime and the district attorneys who prosecute the offenders. These are their stories.
With the first pick in the 2001 NBA draft, the Washington Wizards select Kwame Brown from Lynn Academy, Brunswick, Georgia.
For the first time in NBA draft history, high school kid is number one.
I think we're going to do our best effort to try to make sure that he focuses on what's the most important things for him and his family. But I think Kwame's going to be just fine.
All rise, and welcome to Basketball Court, the podcast in which we relitigate the great what-ifs of basketball history and try to rewrite the past. There are many courts in this country, there are many basketball courts in this country, but there is only one basketball court. That's where you are tonight. I'm Judge Peter Andrews, your host, and we have, as always, our two counselors joining us. Down 3-1, which is the best place to be. It's Sam Tidings. Sam, how you doing?
Nowhere I'd rather be than down 3-1.
That's a bold take. And the defending champion, who's up 3-1 and also has the is fighting tonight's battle on his home turf, Miles Johnson. Miles, how's it going?
I'm just really happy to be here. Really excited to talk about the Wizards.
Yeah, not a common topic of conversation thus far on Basketball Court. And we're joined tonight. We're very happy to have our first ever guest, guest judge, guest lawyer, whatever you want to call him. We play fast and loose with the rules on this show. He is a writer for Bullets Forever, which is the SB Nation blog covering the Washington Wizards, nay, Bullets, and has graciously joined us following two overtimes of preseason basketball, so I'm sure his brain is exactly where it should be. Jake Whitaker, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys.
So, having now watched two overtimes worth of Sixers-Wizards preseason basketball, what can you tell me about double overtime in the preseason? Should we have more of it?
I mean... They always say more of something is better, but that I think we need to have like the sudden death overtime.
Yes,
to have in some league.
We were just talking about that before we came on.
Yeah, or we just a coin flip. I mean, that's fine too. You don't even need the basketball part of it.
I'd be down with just having a tie too.
Yeah, I don't know what's wrong with ties.
Yeah,
I mean it's the preseason. It doesn't matter. Like, this is really just for evaluating talent.
Yeah, all that matters is whether or not Joel Embiid successfully dunked on a bunch of people, which I don't think he did tonight, so sad face.
He got yammed on tonight.
Yeah, well, dude hasn't played basketball in like 900 days. What do you want?
I'm very excited for Embiid. I'm, you know.
Yes. We in Philadelphia are all excited up until the minute he breaks his damn foot again. But for now, let's enjoy the ride. That's not the topic tonight, though. As much as one day we're going to do a Sixers podcast, it'll be great. But it's Washington Wizards. We're going to roll back the clock a little bit. As you all know, the premise of Basketball Court, we are changing the past in the NBA and arguing about how it would affect the present. Fun stuff. And Miles and Sam have prepared argument on a very interesting topic.
Is that a trick question?
You tell me.
They gave up Kwame Brown. Kwame Brown is gone. The City of Angels, Hollywood, just should be celebrating. Throw a parade already, whether you win a championship or not. This man was a bona fide scrub. He can't play. No disrespect whatsoever, but I'm sorry to tell everybody the truth. The man cannot play the game of basketball. He has small hands. He can't catch the ball. He's got bad feet. He can't really move, even though he's mobile. Doesn't really know what he's doing. Doesn't have a post move that he puts to memory that he can do two times in a row. He has no game whatsoever. Plays no defense, doesn't have the heart, the passion, or anything that comes with it. And you're asking me whether they gave up too much? Please.
That's right. In the 2001 NBA draft, the Washington Wizards and Michael Jordan infamously selected Kwame Brown with the number one overall pick. a pick that turned out to be, I think the word that we're looking for is bad. Did not work out for Washington. Kwame Brown, still to this day, a bit of a punchline. And so what we're going to do tonight is give the Wizards an opportunity to go back in time, redraft, pick someone else, and we'll see how that affects the present. The way we're going to do this, I'm going to let Sam go first, and Sam's going to take us through his big points. I'll let Jake ask some questions and give us some of his thoughts, and then after, you know, 10 minutes or so, we'll switch over to Miles. So, Sam, if you're ready, take it away.
I am very ready. Thank you, Your Honor. I want to start with the Washington Wizards and this sort of choose-your-own-adventure. They're not going to draft Kwame. They would not have taken Chandler, or Tyson Chandler, I should say, since Kwame dominated him in all the pre-draft workouts. And pretty much all of my information on this is just straight-up stolen from Jonathan Abrams' amazing book, Boys Among Men. So read that and then listen to this podcast 300 pages later. The Wizards were notoriously against drafting high school players, so that's going to leave them with future Hall of Famer Pau Gasol falling into the Wizards' lap, first overall, coming overseas from Spain. So that leaves the Bulls with Tyson Chandler and Curry after a trade like in real life, and Kwame drops down to the Grizzlies after they make a trade with the Hawks. So my three big takeaways. Number one, the Wizards are good now. MJ comes back like he actually did. Gasol wins Rookie of the Year like he actually did, and they still have Chauncey Billups and Rip Hamilton. The Wizards don't make the playoffs, just like real life, but they do finish 500, which is promising. And if you remember, the next offseason, they added Jerry Stackhouse, but they traded Hamilton and Billups. And so instead, they hold on to them. They make the playoffs in year two with MJ. They make it into the second round. So Abe Pollin decides not to fire his heirness, Michael Jordan. So he decides to stay on. The Wizards are now, if you look at this fake roster, one of the deepest fake teams in the league, with Pau Gasol coming into his own. MJ is still dropping 20 somehow as like a 40-year-old. They have Billups and Hamilton and Jerry Stackhouse, and they end up signing Gilbert Arenas since they still had a crazy amount of cap space after the Strickland and Juwan Howard contracts get off the books. So that means the Wizards are the team that has the assets and the desire to trade for disgruntled, briefly Hawks forward Rasheed Wallace. So behind him and this incredible Wizards team, they somehow rise up together against a terrible Eastern Conference. They make it to the NBA Finals against Kobe and the Lakers. That's so, point one.
I was saying, let's stop there for a second. Finals.
And can digest. We not stop there? Can we just picture this NBA Finals with Kobe and Phil going up against MJ and Doug Collins and Gilbert? It's what we all wanted for so many years, right?
And Gilbert.
I don't know, Jake. Do you think that any of that is plausible?
I would be very curious to see how the usage rate would work with Gilbert Arenas, Michael Jordan, Pau Gasol, and Rasheed Wallace together. I think Michael Jordan still had some pretty high usage there his last couple years in Washington. So, like, that's where I think I'm not sure who backs down. I mean, probably Pau Gasol.
I think Pau definitely backs down. He's always been that sort of passive guy, but he's always been a good passer. So I think that having an old man yell at you to give him the ball every possession would not faze him that much.
Yeah, I think it's just, it's kind of one of those things you can't, you know, if he's being more passive, then he's not going to be, you know, Memphis Pau Gasol in Washington. But, you know, with Jordan there, that might be enough. And like you said, they would have definitely had cap space after those first two seasons there. But I do think part of the reason they spent so much on Arenas was kind of a reactive thing, because the Wizards had been criticized in the past for not being big spenders. And, you know, after letting go of the greatest basketball player ever, I think they really felt they needed to make a splash, and I'm not sure if Jordan's still in the mix that wants to go after his third season.
And that's I'd be fair. Shocked if Jordan wanted to play alongside Arenas, to be honest.
Why's that?
Who wouldn't want to play next to Gilbert? That's surprising to me, personally.
Somebody that, like, is really ball-dominant like Michael Jordan.
Yeah, I mean, even if the Gilbert thing doesn't, like, work out immediately, he's certainly an asset that they could have flipped along for, you know, Rashid or anyone like that. And I know NBA wasn't really as asset-dominated as it has been the last few years with, you know, teams just trying to collect draft picks and players on good contracts and stuff like that, but I still think the deal would have been something that made sense for the Wizards, even with MJ on one more year and Jerry Stackhouse coming in the fold and Billups and Hamilton taking up a lot of playing time at the guard spots.
All right, Sam, what else you got? What else you got happening around the league? Oops, sorry.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say, I love it. It just seems very antithetical to what Jordan was about, but I'm open to it.
All right, that's all I needed to hear. So we're going to move on to the Grizzlies, who are the other team that gets really affected by this, because instead of getting Gasol and teaming him up with Battier in this, I don't know if you want to call it an era or whatever they had together, where they made the playoffs a couple times but never won a game, the Grizzlies are pretty much screwed. Kwame sort of is a winner in this because he doesn't have to deal with MJ calling him homophobic slurs every day and just demeaning him and beating all the confidence out of him. But he still never becomes like an all-star. The Grizzlies never make the playoffs because they never have someone like Gasol leading them. They have Kwame as, I guess, their star player. The team's losing money like crazy. And since they don't have Powell, they can't flip him to the Lakers to give them Marc Gasol. And so there is no grit and grind, which is, I guess, bad news for basketball Twitter. And when the team is put up for sale in 2012, it's Chris Hansen from Seattle who buys the team instead of Robert Parra, who vowed to keep them in Memphis, which means that the Seattle Supersonics come back to the NBA for the start of the 2012-2013 season, thanks to Kwame landing in Memphis.
That's certainly a better legacy for Kwame Brown, yeah.
It makes him a folk hero.
And it also adds to David Stern's legacy, because there's still a lot of people, as you can imagine, in Seattle who are, you know, solely view Stern as this guy who stole the NBA from there and took it to a market in the middle of nowhere and took a promising team out of there. And instead, one of Stern's last acts before he hands everything over to Adam Silver is that he was able to find a way to bring basketball back into Seattle before he left.
I like how Sonics focused you are.
I always have to find some way to just bring the Sonics Thunder into basketball court. We could do something about the 80s and I'd find a way to get the Thunder a title, honestly.
Like, Kwame Brown saving Seattle basketball is not something I think most people could accomplish, but you went there.
Just wait like 5 more minutes when he figures out how Kwame helps Kevin Durant win 8 NBA titles.
Just wait. I still have half my argument to make on this.
Win the Super Bowl.
So then the third sort of component of this is how it affects Kobe, his standing with the Lakers and his legacy, that the Lakers missed out on Kevin Garnett and Jermaine O'Neal, who they really tried for in 2007. And Gasol is pretty much locked up as a Wizard for life because of how well he's playing with them, and he takes them to a title early in his career, and he loves going to the opera and the Smithsonian and the museum and all the lovely things that DC has to offer, so he has no reason to leave Washington. Kobe's dissatisfied with the Lakers, and after 2007, he demands a trade, and there is no Gasol to team up with Kobe in LA, and so the Lakers just decide to deal with Kobe and rebuild. So that leads to sort of the Spurs taking over the West in the late aughts, I guess you would call it, instead of the Lakers going to 3 straight finals. And you can't even say that Kobe's in the same conversation as MJ, because the Wizards, of course, beat the Lakers in the 2004 finals, obviously. And you can't even put him in the same conversation as Tim Duncan, who probably has 5 or 6, maybe even 7 rings since the path to Western supremacy got that much clearer with Kobe and Powell's Lakers out of the way. There's also fewer Kobe stans on basketball Twitter, which is amazing, and something everyone can agree is a good thing. And since Kobe only has 3 rings and Shaq was the MVP of all of them, Shaq gets the credit for those. And Kobe ends up getting traded to Chicago, chasing MJ's shadow. The Lakers get the 2011 draft pick that ends up being Derrick Rose, so they're able to rebuild from that. The Bulls amnesty Kobe after he tore his Achilles in 2013, unlike the Lakers, who for some reason signed him to a long extension. So Kobe bounces around a couple years, and he's basically Nick Young chasing a ring, which is would be interesting to watch, but not something anyone really wants to see. And so then when he retires, instead of all this fanfare and getting the chance to shoot the ball 60 times in his last game, it's mostly just people writing about what could have been about his legacy instead of a year-long praise fest for Mr. Bryant.
Wow.
Thank you. And also, most importantly in this whole argument, the Thunder don't trade for Kendrick Perkins since the Lakers don't have Gasol and Bynum together. Instead they flip Jeff Green for Gerald Wallace at the deadline since he got moved to New Jersey, and then the Thunder win the title in 2012. I'll take any questions from the judge or opposing counsel at this time.
Wait a minute. Gerald Wallace is who delivers Oklahoma City a title?
Ostensibly. Gerald Wallace can defend LeBron better than Kendrick Perkins could defend Chris Bosh, if you remember that series at all, which did not go well for the Thunder.
So if Kobe is Nick Young chasing a ring, then which highly touted rookie busts Kobe for having an affair with Iggy Azalea?
Oh, wow. At this point, since the Lakers are probably decent but mediocre, I'm going to go with Mario Hezonja as the player who's most likely to ignore social norms and bust Kobe for cheating on his girlfriend or wife.
Jake, I realize that Sam is spinning a lot of nonsense. That's basically all he does. Does any of this seem half plausible to you?
I can see some of it. One thing that I forgot that happened in '08 was the Wizards drafted one Carlos Navarro, who played in Spain.
The legend.
It took a few years for him to actually get to the NBA, and basically when he told the Wizards he didn't want to play in Washington, and that it was basically either New York, L.A., or because Pau Gasol was there. You know, Pau Gasol is already with the team, then that probably speeds up the process of getting him there. You have to go with everything else. So, you know, I'm coming around to it.
It's a much better universe for your basketball team than the one that you had to deal with for the last 15 years. You'll at least give me that much, even if it goes a little bit off the rails.
I mean, I don't saw, you know, do finger pistols and actual pistols in the locker room. Well, no, we still had a arena.
I think we'll get to what happens to Bryce Crittenden.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, that's. But I feel more comfortable with this path than what we've dealt with.
Sam, why did the Lakers trade Kobe to Chicago? And what are they getting back? And why does... You just kind of said that just because Shaq got credit for the 3 titles.
Well, I remember from the time that the teams that were going the hardest after Kobe were the Pistons, the Bulls, and the Clippers. I can't imagine that the Lakers would have traded Kobe to the Clippers in any universe, even one as weird as this one. And Kobe actually rejected a deal to Detroit since he thought that the Pistons were essentially gutting their team to bring him on board. And so the only thing that was really left was Chicago, since they were sort of mediocre at that point in the decade, and they had some future draft picks and some assets to give up. So I thought that they made more of a sense as a match with the Lakers than certainly the Clippers or the Pistons did.
But I mean, what's the rationale? Like, why is Kupchak getting rid of Kobe at all?
Kobe says he's going to walk, and Kupchak's been able to give him a second star to play with since Shaq left. And I mean, you've seen what happens when teams have a guy who they don't think is going to stick around. They just got to move him for whatever they can.
So what do you think what do you think the effect is on Derrick Rose? You moved him to LA. What's the effect on his destiny?
Hopefully he learns what consent means, because didn't happen when getting drafted by the Bulls, unfortunately. I think Derrick Rose's legacy is pretty much dependent on what you expect from a Derrick Rose, Andrew Bynum pick and roll in the early 2010s.
So not very much.
I don't know. You have two extremely talented, super young guys who you think would be fun to play with together, who have this legacy now of just injuries and foolishness off the court, that I think that it's a team that the Lakers could certainly market themselves around for a couple of years, but I don't know how long they'd stay healthy together. But just imagine Derrick Rose and Meta World Peace and Andrew Bynum just sharing the court together, making beautiful basketball.
Hosting celebrity bowling nights.
Yeah.
This is the nightmarish part of your timeline. There's really no question about that. All right, so Sam has laid out a comprehensive vision for the NBA. Now I think it's time to give Miles a crack at getting out his main points about the Wizards and about everyone else. So let's give it to the defending champ, Miles. What happens to the Wizards with that number one pick in 2001?
Yeah, so Sam mentioned Jonathan Abrams' book, which is, I will agree, I'll echo, this is really a great read. And in it, it talks a lot about the guys involved in the draft right now. And one of the things that's said is that Kwame had these like really amazing workouts. And in one of them, he kind of has this sort of infamous line where, you know, he tells Michael Jordan, you know, if you draft me, like, he'll never regret it. After he'd had this like really impressive workout. I'm just banking on the fact that that doesn't happen twice. Not that he doesn't perform well in workouts, but that he doesn't, that he's not like as transcendent as he appeared to be in real life. And so I have the Wizards taking Tyson Chandler. I think it was well documented that A. Poland was also pretty weary of international guys. So I don't think that he nor Michael Jordan would have had the foresight to see that Pau Gasol was the pretty easy selection, I think, between those four guys, he and Chandler and Eddie Curry and Kwame Brown.
Let me ask you a question, which Jake mentioned when in our pre-podcast discussions. There's some conversation that the Wizards might have considered trading this pick. I'll ask you first, right, and then I'll ask Jake to weigh in. Do you think that there is any universe in which they would have done that?
I mean, I think it's certainly possible. I don't think... Well, here's what I'll say. I think they were definitely in a rebuilding sort of phase. I mean, they were coming off of winning 18 games 3 years ago, and then 29 games the year before, and then 2 years before, and then 19... the previous year. This wasn't a situation, I don't think, in which you'd want to relinquish your number one draft pick unless you could get like a bona fide superstar. And I don't see where they would have, to me, the assets, even with this number one pick, that you would be able to lure somebody like Vince Carter or Jerry Stackhouse or T-Mac, or somebody that would have like warranted you giving up that number one pick. I mean, I think it's possible, especially since, you know, you saw that the Clippers were willing to trade at two. It's just a gut thing, I guess.
Jake, what do you think about trade there?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's something they might have dabbled with the idea of, but at the same time, I just can't see, for as petty as that sounds, that seems like a Jordan thing. So
yeah,
I think that's why he'd lean to sticking with the draft, unless, like you said, like I think, you know, Jordan would have been happy to get a guy his prime, but I don't think there was anybody out there that got with that pick.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I mean, I think you could have gotten, I mean, I think you could have, you know, done what actually ended up happening, was getting a guy like Elton Brand, but I mean, that would be like really dumb to me, and even like dumb for the Wizards to, you know, give that up to just get back Elton Brand.
Elton Brand was pretty good back in the day.
Elton Brand
is not walking through that door of the MCI Center and saving the Wizards, though. And you MCI might as well take Center, a chance on one of those young guys.
But I mean, if you had
right, wasn't the MCI Center at this point?
I mean, if you had Elton Brand, he'd still be playing. You know, he's in Sixers camp right now. You could be still kicking.
Still the MCI Center.
Was MCI? Did MCI get bought by Verizon, or is MCI different? I don't even remember what the heck.
I have no idea.
See, in future episodes of Basketball Court, if you can change history so that stadiums are named differently, that gives you extra points. I'm just throwing that out.
The Kwame Dome.
I'd watch a ball game at the Kwame Dome. Miles, keep going.
Okay, so right. Wizards take Chandler. And, I mean, the biggest thing is that while he's not the disappointment, I don't think that Kwame Brown ended up being, and I think the reason that he's not is that I think that he would have handled, like, the verbal abuse from Michael Jordan better than Kwame Brown did. I think a lot of Kwame's deterioration stemmed from the fact that he was working in like a hostile work environment every day. So I think Chandler would have fared better underneath sort of the Wizards, like as an organization. But I don't think he would have been like the savior. If you look sort of statistically, he's not really peaking until like the 2007-2008 season. And I'm not convinced he or Jordan, because Jordan was fired in 2003. I don't think either of them would have made it much farther than, you know, around 2007-2008. But, like, I don't know. I'm willing for the sake of argument to say that, like, because Tyson Chandler, unlike Kwame Brown, would have been a better interior defender, somebody who could have, you know, anchored your defense on, like, a quality playoff team, as we saw him do with New Orleans around the same time, that he stays for longer. So I'm having essentially Tyson Chandler kind of until like pretty recently being the sort of stable center for the Wizards, which is like important, I think, to consider because, you know, this is him filling a void that Juwan Howard would have left because he was gone after 2001. But Brown and Chandler, interestingly enough, I didn't realize this before I was prepping for this episode, were pretty statistically similar in lots of categories. I mean, their, you know, rebounding percentages, their sort of shooting percentages, like, were not as drastically far apart as I would have predicted. So I think because of that, I don't think there's any type of like drastic benefit that Tyson Chandler really gives the Wizards, and because of that, I think more or less they make sort of the same roster decisions between about around 2001 and starting around 2007-2008. So things like, you know, acquiring guys like Steve Blake and Juan Dixon, I think MJ still comes out of retirement. I'm keeping all of that more or less the same, which is a way of saying you can sort of fast forward to 2007-2008.
So just to be clear, you don't have them winning the finals.
No, I do not have them coming anywhere close to even a semifinals of any kind, I don't think. I mean, I guess, what, there was that one year where they played Cleveland in the semifinals, but other than that, like, no, the Wizards don't have the talent to make the NBA Finals.
Was that the Crab Dribble series?
Damn, was that the semifinals one? The Crab Dribbles?
No, that was the first round. The only time they got to the semifinals is actually the first year in the Arenas era
They got past the Bulls, and then they got swept by the Wade Heat on their way to the finals. So
that was what, 05?
I do not remember that series at all.
Yeah, it was quick and not pretty.
Yeah, so I'm essentially saying keep everything more or less the same except swap out Kwame Brown for Tyson Chandler. And then, so you have like a starting five that looks like Gilbert Arenas, Son Stevenson, Karan Butler, Antoine Jameson, and Tyson Chandler, which, like, it's pretty good. I have them, like, winning maybe three or four more games with Tyson Chandler. So having them be at, like, 47-35, which makes them a four seed that year. But they get ousted by the Cavs because LeBron is better than everyone else. In terms of, like, interesting, like, diversions, like, the Wizards spent a lot of time trying to acquire a center, right? Because Kwame Brown was, you know, this flop, and they needed somebody anchoring the middle. Because Tyson Chandler is at least proven to be competent, things like drafting JaVale McGee at 18 in the 2008 draft, like, that doesn't happen. And, you know, I think, like, that same draft, there was talk that the rumors that they were interested in a trade with the Knicks. And if not, just selecting the best big man available, which they decided was JaVale McGee at the time. I think a Knicks trade could have been cool. I think because the Knicks ended up taking Gallinari, who D'Antoni apparently wasn't a huge fan of. They took him at 6, but the Knicks also needed like a combo guard and had been looking at Russ, had been looking at Eric Gordon. So I think like you could have potentially thrown something together with that 18 pick, Karan Butler, and like either another sort of like low salary or utility player or future draft pick in exchange for the rights for Gallinari, and some type of like salary match or somebody like Jerry Jeffries or something, because I think Karan Butler was on the books for like $9.3 million that year. I think that could have given like the Wizards like a lot of wing depth. And like some youth, because that team with Arenas and Stevenson and Butler and Jameson is like creeping on. Like they're not ancient, you know, by any means, but you know, it's not like it's a super young team either. And that's super important, right? Kind of going down the rabbit hole here, because like the Wizards also spent like the entire 2008-2009 season making like really terrible trades to like acquire swingmen. And one of those would have been the trade to bring Javaris Crittenden to the Wizards from Memphis. The second one was the one where they traded Pekarov, Darius Ungaila, Ethan Thomas, and the 2009 first round pick, which ended up being Ricky Rubio, for Randy Foy and Mike Miller. Like, wow. The latter trade is like
those
really
are some
terrible.
Great late 2000s basketball names. All being thrown together.
Right? Oleski Pekarov is like my favorite name from this week.
I don't know. Darius Sangalia is pretty up there.
Sangalia also, like, at his peak, was like a decent role player, but I mean, that's another conversation for a different time.
Yes, when we do basketball court, the Darius Sangalia edition.
I'm down to do that.
We'll do an episode serious. Where Darius Sangalla gets a ring for the Thunder. It'll all come full circle.
No, but okay, so this trade is really bad, though.
But so you, so do you think neither of these trades happen? Because that would really change.
No, because I don't believe in the Wizards enough to like think that they don't make bad trades at all, right? Like, you know. Yes, this is like an alternate reality, but like I still think Ernie Grunfeld is not a very good general manager. So I'm like okay with saying one of these trades definitely does happen. I think like the Wizards were just like really misguided on the relative value of the fifth pick. If you go back and like look, they really didn't see the value in picking at 5 when it wasn't going to be somebody they thought who could instantly turn the franchise around. So I'm going to say that they still like execute that trade, which again, that pick could have been Steph Curry, that number five pick. But so that means the Javaris Crittenden thing doesn't happen, which means the like OK Corral like near like gun brawl between him and Gilbert Arenas like never happens either. Another sort of like byproduct of not taking Kwame.
There's a moment in the NBA lore we probably could have done without.
I have mixed feelings about it, to be honest. I mean, I think it's really violent and terrible and awful, but at the same time, I don't know, sports needs cool stories, and it's a legitimately cool story that players were drawing guns on each other in the locker room.
I don't know, Jake, as a Wizards observer, do you agree with that assessment?
The stretch from 2008 to about 2014 was not ideal.
It was roller coaster-ish, would you agree?
It was more just like just riding into like a mine with just like just darkness all around. Like, no ups other than like I guess John Wall, that was getting him was nice. But then it's like even when you get him, it's like, oh, you know, this there's still like two or three more years before this gets good. And, you know, watching John Wall try to run an offense with Nick Young and JaVale McGee was, it was like, why are we punishing John Wall? What did he do? And,
oh well. I'm so scared that he's going to leave, like, the first moment he gets an opportunity.
Yeah.
But again, that's getting ahead of the timeline.
Am I correct in saying that in this timeline, the Wizards don't even get John Wall?
They do not, and that's where I was getting ready to go next is, you know, because Gallinari in his third and fourth years, like, he at this point is a pretty solid contributor, and Chandler is the same way in his eighth and ninth. You have Gilbert Arenas, who at this point was still, like, competent and, you know, benefited from the fact that he didn't have the stress of, again, having a gun drawn on him. So the Wizards are, like, decent, and they're decent enough that they don't get that number one pick, who ended up being John Wall. Which is really bad because, you know, Arenas also ends up regressing pretty quickly after that 2009-2010 season. But you know, they need a point guard. So he's not traded to the Magic for Rashard Lewis in 2010 and like really ends up being kind of like a very poor man's Kobe Bryant, like what we saw last year, just in terms of just taking terrible shots. In terms of being able to convince a delusional fan base that he's not playing as poorly as he actually is. I mean, just really ugly, ugly stuff from Gilbert. I feel like I'm biased, though, because I feel like I'm one of the few Wizards fans who, like, just really was not ever here for Gilbert Arenas. But in this timeline, I have him just really deteriorating pretty quickly.
Well, let me just stop there and ask the question, because I don't know a lot of Wizards fans. I want to ask Jake, do you agree that most Wizards fans were there for Gilbert Arenas? What was that era like as Arenas was sort of winding down his tenure with the team?
I mean, I would say Gilbert Arenas is kind of like a guilty pleasure kind of thing. Like, you know that it's probably bad for you, and like even when he was at his peak, I think people tell you, you know, it's not going to end in a championship here. And that, you know, even when he was on his best scoring nights, he, you know, had the defensive issues and just the, you know, knuckleheadedness and everything else that, you know, it was probably going to end in some sort of a disaster eventually. But, you know, it's still just kind of like relative to like the past two decades before that, it was fun. Even when it was crazy and not good. So that's still an upgrade. And I think that's why he still kind of like has a fond spot in a lot of people's hearts, even though he had all the flaws he did.
So let me ask Miles to start wrapping up, and I'll ask you two questions to direct the wrap up here. One of which is, I think Sam's general arc for the Wizards is that they're better off not having taken Kwame. Do It seems like you disagree, so that's question number one, is can you answer that question? And then number two is, who's the biggest ancillary winner or loser from this change in the world?
Yeah, so I think it's tricky. I think that ultimately the Wizards, ironically, were better off for taking Kwame Brown because of how much they suffered. I think often in basketball especially, but really any type of, you know, sport that has a lottery draft, like, it's the worst thing to be is mediocre. You either need to be a title contender every year, someone like the Spurs or the Warriors, or you need to be a cellar dweller, someone who has, like, the opportunity to get a high lottery pick. And the Wizards were so bad after taking Kwame Brown and just really sunk that it made, you know, the John Wall draft, and I think, and that's really the linchpin of it. They made that, like, an obvious decision. Whereas I think if you had put someone like Tyson Chandler, someone who could have, you know, anchored a defense in a way that Kwame Brown didn't, someone who could have played the pick and roll game, I think if the Wizards had been, like, aggressive, trading for a guy like Gallinari, you know, making that move up from the 18th to the 6th pick, I think you, if you did all those things, like, yeah, you could have fielded a semi-competent team, maybe even a team that could, you know, with some magic in April and May, like, make a deep playoff run. But I think it would have required, like, still a lot of, like, savvy from an organization that I don't think, like, has the best track record. You know, I think, like, you know, it would have required, like, Tyson Chandler would have made your job harder because it wouldn't have made choices as obvious. You know, you have the number one pick, you take John Wall because you need an all-star, and John Wall is going to be an all-star. You know, if you don't have those, like, you know, glaringly obvious opportunities, now you're relying on Ernie Grunfeld to say, okay, let me, like, put together a team piece by piece. And, I mean, he's proven that, like, that's not something that he's capable of doing. So I think, like, the Wizards being so bad, being able to get guys like Wall, like Beal, who they took at, what, that was 3 or 4 that year. And then I think in terms of the biggest ancillary winner is not necessarily a team as much as it is Kwame Brown. I mean, he isn't remembered, I don't think, as the bust that he was. I have him being drafted. I have him essentially doing what Tyson Chandler did, which is being drafted by the Clippers and then being traded to the Bulls. But just really benefits, you know, being away from the Wizards, away from Michael Jordan. So I think he's, like, a huge winner. But I also think Michael Jordan benefits from this. He doesn't go down as the guy who, like, you know, picked one of the worst busts in NBA history. And, like, his sort of reputation isn't tarnished in that way, I guess, until, like, he inevitably gets to Charlotte and picks Frank Kaminsky, and we all mock him for that anyway. But I mean,
nothing can undo that.
No, nothing. There's nothing. No type of alternate universes or timelines that can undo that horrendous pick. But yeah, I think, like, the biggest winner is Kwame Brown. I mean, I think the Wizards, like, ultimately were better off for picking him because I think it, like, led to, you know, such bad basketball that they could get John Wall. But I think him, like, not having to be here would have been, like, amazing for his career.
All right, so before we move into the judging phase, I'll give Sam, like, 1 minute to nitpick with Miles if he wants.
I mean, I don't really want to nitpick that much because it's not that hard of an argument to make that the Wizards would be better if they didn't draft Kwame Brown. But I kind of feel like even expecting them to make good trades and good picks in the draft, like trading up and getting Gallinari when they basically spent the latter half of the 2000s drafting, you know, Jan Vesely and all this other assorted, you know, garbage throughout the league. So even in your universe where they have a somewhat decent team with Chandler for however long he's there and Arenas and expect them to build some ancillary parts, I still, even with your very low expectations for Grunfeld, I think you're still expecting him to do too well.
Wait, all right. But I don't even have them, like, really charting like anywhere. I mean, I just have them like essentially stock. You don't even have faith in him to like just stockpile the assets.
No, not in the least.
Okay.
All right, so we've heard the arguments from Sam Miles, and now we're going to let the expert make a decision. And just so you know, Jake, decisions on the basketball court are completely arbitrary. They're non-reviewable by any appellate court or Supreme Court. This is a sort of a binding authority on the entire world of basketball. And the criteria you can use are... The criteria you can use in basketball court are whatever strikes your fancy. You can decide that one person had the better ancillary effect than the other. You can just say who you liked more. Or I will frame the conversation. I think the question is whether you think that Sam is right, that the Wizards are better if they don't take Kwame, or whether Miles is right, that the Wizards are better if they do take Kwame today. So... with that in framing in mind, Jake, what do you think?
Well, I think part of Miles' argument kind of is built around, having that essentially the same core, but with Chandler. But part of the thing that made the Wizards' core what it was that they were able to trade Kwame for Caron Butler. And so if you keep Chandler, then you don't get that piece. So instead of, the Arenas Butler Jameson core, now it's kind of just Jameson Chandler. And, I still think that there's something to that. And you have a defense piece in that core, which helps. But, I think it's always going to appeal more to a Wizards fan by saying if you had a terrible person and instead maybe had someone else, it would be great. But I just feel like Powell instead of Kwame, a lot of the same kind of things happen, just Powell handles it better. But like he doesn't go like completely through everything Kwame went through, but he still doesn't come out well. He's like a really nice guy that's just been scarred by the world.
So who comes out on top here?
I think I gotta go Miles.
Oh my goodness.
This is fantastic.
I am never winning in this again, am I?
Wow. This is see, and you can't even blame me for this anymore.
Right. There's no judge bias anymore.
I've got two judges against me now.
But for what it's worth, if I were to write an opinion here, I would write a dissent because I don't judge this on anything like rooting for the Warriors. I like to see who can come up with the craziest side out, and the side out of Kwame Brown bringing Seattle, the Supersonics is too good to pass up. But
yeah,
right? Can we get this in writing?
Yeah, I do tip my cap to that.
Yeah, I'll put the thing about dissenting opinions is one of the things they teach you in law school is that if you're citing a dissenting opinion, no matter how great the language is, because you have to write at the end dissenting, then you're probably not making that strong an argument, because that's not good law. The only good law is what Jake says, and that is Miles winning his second straight and has a 4-1 lead now.
Yeah, it feels... that's how the Lakers beat the Magic, right? 4-1.
Yeah, 1-2, lost 1-2.
Nice.
Well, so I'm Dwight fitting. Howard now, then, instead of LeBron.
There's so many like really grim implications with you being Dwight Howard too. It's a lot to get into.
Yeah, you're really going backward here. All right, well, that just about does it for us here on Basketball Court. I want to start by thanking Jake Whitaker for coming on from Bullets Forever, which is SB Nation's cover to the Washington Wizards. It's a great website that I've definitely read in my life. I'm joking with you. Miles is responsible for bringing Jake on. Jake, thanks for coming on. Do you want to just tell everyone where they can find your stuff about the Wizards?
Yeah, just head over to